Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot out, brown cow, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing.
Hey, boss, you know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
I'm back. Good morning and welcome. Elton Jim Toronto filling in for Bill and Wendy this morning. We'll be here till noon. Thanks to Pete McMurray for greasing the skids. And so we're gonna have some fun. It's only a 2-hour show, so I promise, as I always do, to fill this show with 3 pounds of bologna in a 1-pound bag. We will jam pack these 2 hours. So strap in.
No. Okay.
Now, this is a unique situation because I was here last week for 2 shows, filling in for Bill and Wendy, with Andrea Darlis.
Yes.
as my co-host.
Yes.
We were co-hosting.
Yes.
But today, you're back to your day job.
I'm anchoring news, but I'll still be here for you.
Yeah,
if you need
so really.
If you need a shoulder to cry on, or if I need one, or the listeners need one.
I mean, so the listeners really won't really be able to tell the difference so much so. It was just that we're not going to be in the same studio.
No, I know we're in different rooms.
But it's good to know you're there for moral support.
I'm here
and
for
if
you.
I do need. Always be close to a mic. You never know I'm going to ask
Go
you
off,
to jump
off
in.
The road.
But I'll tell you, thanks to Curtis, the producer, we've got a jam-packed show. I'm really excited. For those who have listened to me on occasion here when I do a fill-in, every so often, I do something called the Millennial Meter. You know, everybody is worried about millennials. How old are you, Curtis, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 25.
Oh, geez. Holy millennials.
Right in the middle of millennialism.
Yeah. Well, like I said, so those of us who are past the millennial age, we are always looking to see if we are still hip and cool and with the scene.
If we're still street?
I always flunk this game.
I know, exactly.
I haven't played this game, you guys.
Well, yeah, so I usually have my godson, Patrick, who is 33, so he's right in the sweet spot.
He's in the middle.
Yeah. And so I will talk to him about millennial trends, and I will also find out, I will ask him things that I'm thinking of doing that will make me cool and with the scene with the millennials.
Yeah, I think I use words sometimes. Like I'll say awesome. Yeah, a lot, or cool, and I know that's not cool.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm worried about do I grow some different facial hair, or what do I wear? If I'm doing this, am I going to be looked at as? So he's my what I call my millennial meter.
Like because, your scarf thing.
Yeah, like my scarf. Right. Oh, yeah.
There you go, Mary.
Wow, your scarf. Wow, Mary Vandeveld.
What?
Coming out of the woods and hating my scarf thing.
I didn't say I hate it.
No, I'm
just
joking.
Mary, ask him about his festive pin.
She remembers the festive pin.
Is it a brooch?
Well, it's not a brooch, once again.
It's a brooch.
Wow,
it's not a brooch.
Yourself.
It's a women, as I've said many times, women wear brooches and virile men wear festive pins.
Oh.
You know, I have a question for your nephew, too, for your godson. I know beards are very big
right
now. Mary, I think both your sons have beards, right? They're millennials.
Well, they have the half beard, you know.
Right.
It's kind of growing.
Half beard.
Well,
that's all I ever heard.
It's not the big, bushy beard.
So beards are big right now. Andy Mazur has a beard. I mean, Dave Bennett did for a while.
Yeah.
So the kids all have beards. I'm just curious if the girls, if the women like that,
well,
or,
see, this is
or their partners.
Well, see, that's what I want to add, because my godson Patrick has had one for 2 or 3 years, and it's always, every time I see him, the beard is in a different phase. It's either kind of long, or like Mary is saying, it's a little shorter, or it's a stubble thing.
Right.
It's always, now, I wanted to ask him about it, because not only has it's been a fad for several years now, and I'm wondering, A, when that's going to die out, and a lot of these guys are going to shave those messy, bushy beards off.
Right.
And then they're going to look at the pictures of themselves from 2017, or in 2018, and go, oh my God.
What was I thinking?
What was I thinking? Like, have you ever seen some early pictures of Bill Clinton? When he was in college, he had this huge beard because it was like the late 60s, early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
He had a huge beard and he looked ridiculous. So it's going to be interesting because don't forget, a lot of these guys are getting married with these giant beards too.
Right.
So that's in their wedding pictures.
So I want to know how the women feel about that, or their partners, how they feel about that. Because...
I know, because women have always complained about beards. They're itchy.
Right.
They're this, they're that. And I'm sitting there, that's exactly what I've been always thinking. Like, yeah, this is a big fad, but are women into it, or are they just kind of putting up with it until...
That's what I thought.
There's a moment when they can tell their boyfriend to shave it, and he will say okay as opposed to no.
Because
right now, it still seems like it's cool. But what I want to ask my godson, Patrick, he's always been pushing me to grow a beard, but see, the problem is that...
You can't?
I can grow a beard.
You got a little, like, goatee.
Oh, yeah, but I can grow a beard in 5 seconds. The problem is, my beard is gray.
Oh, right.
And so I don't think the gray beard really, I think it makes you just look old. So,
although I gotta say, Dave Ennett, when he had his beard,
he looked distinguished.
Yeah. Yes,
I grew
Dave
a beard.
Dapper anyway. Again, not a millennial word.
I grew a beard.
Dapper,
soft.
You know what I mean.
Freshman year of high school, over Christmas vacation, I grew a beard. I was 14. Back when I was sweating, and I had. Back when I had testosterone.
Yeah. And another thing I want to ask him, the bald head.
Right.
Like, everybody's shaving their heads. How long is that going to last?
I don't know.
I want to know that, too.
I know, because I think, and I have seen a few people with not growing the side as much as they used to, like the Tom Skilling look. But even Tom... You know, if you look at Tom Skilling, Tom has kind of he does shave it close to the head, but it's still, the imprint is still there, as opposed to just going Telly Savalas.
I wonder if we'll ever get back to when we went to high school, the mullets, the longer hair.
Well, you know what's funny? I watch reruns of Supermarket Sweep. And there's a lot of mullets from the 90s and late 80s on that show.
I don't even know that show.
Oh, you never saw Supermarket Sweep, where they go in the supermarket and you run around and collect food? Oh,
God,
I love that.
God, that wouldn't be a game show that I would think you would be...
Oh, yeah.
I'm big in front of your mind. Amount of time and just go at it.
I'm big on the pricing games.
Oh.
I love A Price is Right.
Yeah.
I love I'm not big on Let's Make a Deal, but I do love a good Price is Right.
I was at a baby shower yesterday. We had to play the Price is Right with baby items. Guess how much
cool.
they cost. And then
whoever
came the closest one.
Oh, that's
cool
neat.
Idea. I was like $8 off.
Did you play Plinko, too?
How about Pressure Luck?
I wanted to.
Remember? No whammies, no whammies.
But no whammies.
There were a lot of men there, so it was very interesting.
Oh, no.
It was
a
mixed shower.
Fun. Oh, really? A mixed shower?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure the guys were thrilled.
Well,
nice.
They seemed to have fun. I sat with one. There was all the women at the table, one guy, and he's like, I've never been to one of these.
You know what? I know I'm such a Scrooge, and this is just going to play into Elton Jim's whole theory of me.
And it was said that the Grinch's heart... grew twice as long.
I do not like baby showers. Anybody, if you don't ever, I'll send you a gift.
Really?
But I don't want to have to go to the baby shower.
Wow.
It's the games.
It's the games. They're
the
games.
They gotta go.
Are they always games at these things?
Yeah, but some are easy. And,
you're breaking.
Yes, the sex and the weight.
It's
blah,
like
blah, blah.
3 hours of your life you never get back.
You're breaking my...
usually the food's pretty good sometimes.
You're breaking my image and my fantasy. I always thought that those baby showers were basically...
fantasy? What do you think we do at a baby shower?
Pillow fights. No pillow fights?
Stop.
He's just eating.
Yeah, Mary and I break out the pillows. Yeah, we put on our PJs.
Yeah, no PJs and pillow fights?
We put on our lingerie.
Oh, you're killing me.
That would be fun.
That's what I thought. I thought it was PJs and pillow fights.
There's punch. Sometimes it's spiked.
Well, no, now.
We had an open bar yesterday. It was a great shower. It was great.
An open bar was a great shower.
Guys, it was like, wow, this is weird. But
wow.
It was great. No, it's really fun.
Yeah, it's good to be drinking around the baby.
Well, the baby's not born yet.
Yeah, but the mother's there. The baby is there, right?
That's the weird thing. She doesn't get to drink.
Right, exactly. Everybody else is getting sloshed.
I know.
And she's over there, you know, counting her presents.
You know what? She must have okayed it.
What I think is kind of cool now, and again, this is very millennial. I like the gender reveals. I think those are super cool to see.
Well, that's a cool. I'm glad that they're.
Like them at all.
I like embracing that because I always have. I've been a firm believer in knowing what your child is. The reason why there was a surprise was because we never had the capability to know.
Right.
So that's where the tradition came from. But
I do like the surprise aspect too. But if you have to know or you want to know, you know, if the parents decide, I kind of like the different ideas that they're doing with these gender reveals. They're kind of neat.
Cool. When they shoot off the pink or blue.
Yeah, the
stuff
cannon.
Out of the shoot the cannon.
Oh, it's just another reason to have a party. Give me a break. Millennials love to have parties.
Reveal.
That's all. They all love to have parties.
Yeah. There can never be surprises anymore. Nobody can be surprised. Why?
Yeah, well, because we share everything. Everything is online.
Everybody has anxiety, and it gives them, you know, they get
Don't you like biting into a cupcake and seeing, if it's pink frosting or blue frosting?
Oh, is that what they do?
Oh, yeah, there's cakes, there's cupcakes.
Oh, yeah, all different kinds of things.
I've never been to one of those reveal parties.
Sometimes you open up a box and balloons will come out, either pink or blue.
Oh, that's
cool. Mostly do it on social media now, though, don't
they?
Yeah,
it's a big social media thing.
Instead of having a
party, they usually, well, that's neat.
You know, post it.
And then later in the show, I wanted to talk about what I think is the story of the year. It had everything you could expect and want out of a story. Pop culture, regular culture, legal. Battle of the Sexes, you name it. Brett Kavanaugh and his hearings. That had to be the story of the year. It's got a little bit of everything. Plus, the most important thing, I think, for the first time in about 15 years, or maybe say since the internet, we finally had a communal event. You know, we're so individual these days. But everybody in September, for those 2 or 3 days, was watching the same show. That doesn't happen anymore. They used to happen all the time. You used to watch the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, or you used to watch the Moonwalk, or you used to watch the Watergate hearings. That doesn't happen anymore. Everybody's watching their own thing, but for those 2 or 3 days in September, during that confirmation hearing, everybody was kind of all doing the same thing. It was kind of cool for a change, because we haven't been communal in quite a long time. So I want to talk about that. And then at 11:30, as I said, I'm dipping my toe into the mayoral election.
Are you running?
Well, I may go as a. First of all, I'd have to move into Chicago, so that's a problem.
Say, hey, you can still run.
Hey, it didn't stop Mayor Emanuel. Hi-o.
The field's not crowded enough.
Yeah, we'll sign your petition.
Yeah. Hey, he didn't live in Chicago either, but at least at the beginning. But so Paul Vallis, mayoral candidate Paul Vallis, will be joining me here at 11:30. So if you want to hear from Paul Vallis and talk about, don't forget, we are going to be a full court press in terms of mayoral politics here in Chicago the next couple of months, because the mayoral election is February 26th. So we will talk to Paul Vallis at 11:30. That and so much more. Glad to have Mary Vandeveld and Andrea Darlis joining me here. Filling in for Bill and Wendy, this is Elton Jim. We'll be back after this. No switching.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
Jim Toronto filling in for Bill and Wendy this morning. Hey, it's New Year's Eve. The final day of 2018. I hope your 2018 was filled with memorable moments. Mine certainly was. If I have some time at the end of the show, I'll play you one of my great moments of 2018, and perhaps even of my entire life. That's how cool this was. And I'll just give you a hint on that. As you can hear in the background, I'm playing Baby It's Cold Outside. We're talking about the sort of the biggest story of the year, and we'll talk about that later in the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. And I think it's the Brett Kavanaugh controversy, confirmation, whatever you want to call it. But in terms of the biggest fake controversies, it has to be this. There was a controversy about Baby It's Cold Outside. Somebody called during the Christmas season. Someone called a Cleveland radio station and complained that in the Me Too world, this song was sexist and it was date rape. And they're just imposing all these notions that are just not there for a song that was written in 1944. It's a harmless song. It's 60 some years, it's almost, 70 years old, more than 70 years old. And it's flirty, and it's fun, and it's harmless. And you know what? You're going to hear it for 6 weeks, and then you won't hear it again for a year. So slow down. But yeah, there was a... And thankfully, for one time, I was glad to see that social media actually came out on the right side of this. People said, come on. Slow down. And there was a line in there. There's a line that apparently somebody was complaining about. They said that, she says, what's in this drink? And, oh, that was supposedly a reference to maybe, you know, date rape or something. And so, well, wait a minute. I could look at it the other way and say, maybe she liked the drink. Hey.
She didn't realize there was alcohol in it.
Yeah, don't you alcohol. Sometimes when someone fixes you a drink you've ever had before, don't you go, wow, what is this?
Yeah.
So
some drinks have many different kinds of liquor.
Yeah. And so what now? Any time a woman has alcohol, that's you're plying her to do something wrong or illegal? No. It's a fun, flirty song. In fact, you know, I've always thought, especially in today's society where we're having more of a female empowerment kind of perspective, I always thought, why doesn't somebody record that song the opposite way? Like Andrea, or Mary, if you're there, we can sing the song and you could be trying to keep me there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they kind of did in Glee. Did you see the version in Glee with the two guys?
Right,
sing
exactly. But my point is, in these days, women in many cases are the aggressor.
Yeah.
So why not flip it and have fun with it? It's a song, folks.
I think Miley Cyrus did something.
Did she? Well, good for her then.
Of some sort where she did that.
But to me, that was the most created controversy of 2018.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And then, of course, the other crazy controversy, I don't know if it's a controversy. Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson had the engagement from hell. Anybody with any kind of sense knew that this romance, whatever you want to call it, was doomed to fail. It was our summer little preoccupation from June until September. As soon as it was almost like Greece. You know, summer loving. As soon as they went back to school, they broke up.
I was one of those people who just, and again, forgive me, I didn't care. I like Ariana Grande.
Of course, you shouldn't care.
Crazy talented. I don't think he's funny.
I don't even know who he was.
Yeah, well, no one did. No one did.
Who is this guy?
I thought she's way, you know, he's above her skis.
But who didn't see that these two, they went from meeting each other to get engaged and having the tattoos and all this stuff. I mean,
the tattoos. That's the curse.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, and it's like anybody with any kind of a brain said this is not going to happen. You hear these people, oh, I'm rooting for love. It's like, well, that sounds nice, but we know where this is going. And my gosh, I figured they'd last until Christmas. I didn't think they wouldn't make it until September.
They were faster than who was it? The first card? Was it Kim who had the 19-day romance or the 19-day marriage?
Yeah, I mean,
or Khloe.
I don't even keep up with the Kardashians.
How long are the Kardashians going to be?
Well, hopefully, it sounds like forever. Big. Sadly, I think they're not going away. But Pete Davidson sounds like he's going. Then he wound up almost committing suicide. Jeez, what a nice little turn that story took. Wow, talk about 6 months of craziness. We have somebody here on the phone here. Is that Carrie from Sycamore? Go ahead, Carrie. How you doing?
Yes, hey, old Jim. Good to hear you guys on the radio. And usually you're on weird times in the middle of the night. But, so actually it was like a few days ago, or maybe right before Christmas. It was either, I can't remember because it was late at night. It was either Dave Plyer or Matt Bubala were talking about the Baby It's Cold Outside song. And what you just said is actually, it was in the movie that it was in. So there's a side story going on where there's another couple, an older couple, and the woman is singing kind of the same song to the exactly the same song to the man, and nobody I never knew that.
Oh, cool. Really, well, that's the way it should be. Yeah, especially in today's world.
Yeah. So these were, and it was an older couple. It was somebody famous. I can't remember.
Oh, I'll have to look that up.
It was crazy. And the other weird thing was, originally they wanted whoever the producer of the movie or whoever wrote the score wanted the song to be Slow Boat to China, which there's nothing racy in that, but at the time they thought it was too racy because wow. there's a lyric that says, I'd like to get you on a slow boat to China.
Oh, wow.
The other boys at the dock or something like that.
So even then they couldn't.
That was too racy, and they picked the other one. So the whole thing is very weird, but I'm with you, Amanda. There's nothing wrong with that song.
No, and you're going to hear it you're going to hear it for, 4 weeks, and then it's gone, and
exactly.
it's fine.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for calling, Kerry. Cool information. Have a happy new year.
Thank you too, Jim.
Okay, bye-bye. Cool. Yeah, so let's put the baby "It's Cold Outside" controversy to rest.
And, I always love that song.
Yeah, like I said, we should record it the other way. You and me, Andrea.
Oh, we should.
Yeah, you should want me to stay, and I should want to leave.
Oh, yeah.
You should be plying me with drinks and compliments.
Mm-hmm. In this holiday fantasy world, absolutely.
Yeah. And my brother will be upset if I'm not home.
There you go. I can't sing very well, though.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear this. You can do the background vocals, Mary.
Wow.
Yeah, can you do doo-wops, Mary? Or shaboom shabooms?
Exactly. Hey.
Well, it is 10:31, and so I think we're just going to stop this conversation, and we're going to throw it to Andrea. But as I said, at the other side of this news, we will talk to my godson, Patrick, who's 33, is a key millennial, and we're going to talk to see if I'm still cool, if Andrea's still cool, if Mary's still cool, and if you're still cool. What is happening with millennials? He is my millennial meter. We will see how the meter, where the needle falls on the millennial meter. But right now it is 10:31. Jim Toronto filling in for Bill and Wendy. And here's the news with Baby It's Cold Outside, Andrea Darling.
Thank you, Jim.
Jim Toronto with you this morning, filling in for Bill and Wendy. And now, those are the sounds of Ramsey Lewis and the In Crowd. Because this is the Millennial Meter with my godson, Patrick Minogue. Hello, Patrick.
Jim, hey, how are you?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out here as we say goodbye to 2018 and we say hello to 2019. I have to go to you, my millennial meter, to find out exactly, am I still cool? Was I ever cool? Or can I be cool?
Right. I'm so glad to be back. So long, 2018. Hello, 2019.
Yeah, so I was looking over some of the, we were talking a little earlier about the beard phenomenon, and that certainly has not slowed down in 2018, if anything. I've seen more people grow beards this year than ever before.
A lot of beards. I think beards are sticking around for the next 10 years.
Do you really think that they're going to be around for that much longer?
I don't think they're going away. I mean, if you look at even like some of the athletes in the NBA and the NFL, I mean, beards are not only look at Bryce Harper. They're not only sticking around; they're getting bigger. They're more. they're longer, but still tightly groomed. It's pretty fascinating.
I haven't seen you in about a month or so. What is the status of your facial hair?
So interesting. I had a pretty, as of 2 days ago, I had a pretty burly winter beard going, and I looked in the mirror. I was like, well, it's in this weird where time doesn't exist between Christmas and New Year's.
Right.
And I might need to trim it up a bit. So as of yesterday, I gave it a nice little self-grooming, some self-care. Self-care is another
trend that
we'll talk about maybe
later. Self-care. Yeah. It's not manscaping anymore. Now it's self-care.
Self-care, right, exactly. Self-care is
good. But it's still, I mean, it's not the stubble look. It's still a full beard, right?
Yeah, still a full beard. It's not like the 5 o'clock shadow. It's still a pretty
and now you've had a beard. How long have you had a beard? At least 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah. I mean, the last time I fully, I shaved, completely with like a razor down to the skin is probably 4 or 5 years. It's been
wow.
It's been a while. Yeah, I forget what my face looks like, you know.
Now, earlier in the show, Andrea was asking, what do you, I don't know, do you talk to women at all? Do the gals like the beard? When I was growing up, beards were always kind of on and off. There was no trend like there is now where everybody has one. Right. But women would always complain about a mustache or beard that it was itchy. And yet today's beards, like you were saying, many of them are unkempt on purpose.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm wondering, where are women? We have one of the producers in the in the producer's booth here. And I was wondering if she could come on and give a little...
Yeah.
A little female perspective on the beard. Because it's funny.
Why don't you just ask? You're looking for a millennial. Just ask me.
If this was 1970, if this was 1974.
Hey, I wasn't born then. Or I might have been.
But no, I mean, and now what's funny is our millennial producer, Curtis, no beard for you.
I can't grow a beard.
Oh, really?
Right. I just can't grow one.
Yeah, you do. You seem to have that beautiful. Baby face skin.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, your face is like my palm. It's as smooth as a baby's butt. No calluses or face
in the morning
or hair. Although the other side of my hand has hair. But now, and I apologize. I don't know your name.
Ashley,
who was produced for Pete just this morning. You're a millennial, I assume, right?
Yes.
At least, although you may carry yourself well for your age. So what is your take on the male beard? Do you put up with it, or do you like it, or is it a fad? Are you waiting for it to go away? What do you think you and your friends think of the beard?
Most of my friends and myself were a fan of the scruff. Not like the manly,
scruff.
Like long
right.
beard. We're not a fan of that. We're a fan of like
the scruff,
the shadow,
the yeah. shadow.
Do you like
the five o'clock shadow?
Does actually like the look or the feel?
The look. The feel is scratchy.
Okay.
Right. See, it
okay.
is scratchy.
So it is. Yeah. See, that's the bottom line.
So we're still.
I think that's universal.
Yeah.
I think the feel is not the appeal. Sorry about that.
But hey, there's the phrase that pays. The feel is not the appeal. You better copyright that.
I will. I will trademark it. I think the like you said. I think it's the aesthetic more than anything because I think no matter what, unless you're using some beard oil, which I'm a fan of.
Beard oil?
Kind of soften it. Yeah, they have that now, Jimmy. It's crazy. They have it's a whole new line for men, right? Where they have like these oils now that you can apply to your beard that softens it up. And
it
will help a little bit,
yeah.
But it's only a little bit. I think at the end of the day, you're still dealing with some coarse hair there. So.
Well, now I have to ask Ashley this. And the funny thing is, so my godson Patrick's 33. He just turned 33 a few months ago. And what's interesting is I've noticed a few gray hairs in your beard.
Like, oh yeah,
yeah.
It's every day. There's like a new
one. Well, and you know, and your dad is gray, so you know that might be in the genes. But so here I have to ask you, because you've always been, I have a goatee, and I've had it for 20 years, and I've grew, as I said, I've had beards on and off for many years in my life, and I could grow one, but now my beard is gray. So now my question, you've always said, you should grow a beard, but I just think a gray beard, I mean, I don't know. If I could do the scruff thing like Ashley's talking about, but even, does gray scruff count?
I think, I like gray hair, like the silver fox look.
Oh, really?
See, yeah. Like Dave Ennett. Do you remember, actually, I don't know if you knew Dave Ennett when he had his beard. He had the
silver
beard. It was really very distinguished, as Mary described. Yeah.
Wow. You know, because my wife was like, you should grow your beard. And, we watched
that's a whole different story.
That British baking show. You ever see that British baking show? There's that guy, Paul Hollywood. And
nobody watches the British baking show.
I do.
Very niche.
Hey,
very
love.
Niche.
I like a good cumin recipe, I've been debating. But like, if I don't shave for 2 or 3 days, I do get the scruff. But to me, it looks. I don't know. There's an art to the scruff, though, isn't there, Ashley? It has to be molded yet look like it's unkempt, right?
In a way, yeah, it has to be, I don't want to say full, because I know a lot, like my brother has a problem, he can't grow it underneath to connect, Yeah. But if it doesn't connect, just shave it off. It should try to connect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Agree. Yeah. Yeah. And then the worst is the neck beard, right? Actually, I think we can agree with that.
That's awful.
Yeah. You got to get that tight underneath your chin there. You can't let that go down. I mean, you know, remember Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler was like the neck beard hero. He always had that. And we're like, come on, man. Just tighten that up a little
bit. Well, that's why, like I said, especially I was watching the, when you watch the baseball playoffs, and especially if you watch the hockey playoffs, but I was watching the baseball playoffs too. And my gosh, everybody, they showed a shot of both dugouts. And even the cheerleaders, the female cheerleaders had beards.
They did not.
No, I'm just saying. Everybody on the bench, you know, in baseball, because, I mean, in football, you know, they're always wearing the helmet, so it's hard to see the guys. But I'm watching the World Series, and everybody on the bench had a beard. I'm like, my gosh, talk about... This is more than a fad.
Do you remember? Okay, this was okay. Again, this will be dating ourselves, but there was, I think it was the Cincinnati Reds, and Andy Mazur could back me up. There was an owner named Marge Schott, who the players and owners didn't think too highly of, but she had a no beard, no mustache, no goatee. You had to be clean shaven.
Right, that was in the '90s.
The whole team, and if you grew a beard or a mustache or whatnot, you got fined.
The Yankees have that now.
Oh, they do.
Yeah, the Yankees have that in play.
And then
Johnny Damon.
And then the funny thing is, back in the '70s. The Oakland A's, when they were winning their three World Series championships in a row, their owner, Charlie Finley, paid guys to grow mustaches.
Really?
They wanted the facial hair. And so everybody on the team, like the 73 and 74 and 72 Oakland A's, they all had mustaches or facial hair. Even Raleigh Fingers, who was a...
the handlebar mustache.
Handlebar mustache.
Yeah.
He was a reliever, and he had the handlebar mustache. But they all...
That was cool.
They all had beards and mustaches. I think they actually got... is Andy there? Hey, Andy, are you there? Let me pull him up. Is he up? I don't know where he's at.
Hold on one second. I think he's working on something.
Oh, okay. No problem. But he may remember that. But then, like you said, Marge Schott was the other way was anti beard.
Right.
I was just wondering on the Millennium Meter, because I'm sitting here going, I have resisted growing a beard, but my gosh, if this is going on for another 10 years, I might have to try to grow. I mean, I can grow one, but I've been resistant. But I guess I might just have to go for it.
I mean, I've been telling you. I mean, I think if you look back to the records here, we've been coaxing you to grow a beard, to give it a shot. I mean, I want to see it.
Well, your dad grew. Does your dad still have his?
Yeah,
he still has his.
He's still going for it.
Yeah.
Do you want to see it to make fun of him, or do you want to really see how it would look?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it turns out. You know what?
Well, like I said, I've got a picture of me from when I was like 16 or 17 with a full beard. I mean, back then it was dark. You know, I mean, and now, like I said.
I know you can do it.
Hey, Andy, are you there?
Yeah, you know you can do it.
Andy? No, he's still not there. Am I? I don't know if I can. I see him. There you are. Are you there, Andy?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, so Andy, do you remember the Oakland A's in the 70s when they were, didn't Charlie Finley pay the players to grow facial hair?
He wanted them to look mean.
Yeah.
He wanted them to look tough.
And now they just look downright scared. Now they look like Ted Kaczynski.
Yeah.
I mean,
Darren Headlights.
Yeah, it's like a Unabomber World Series. But, okay, so I don't know. Maybe 2019, all it takes me is about a week and a half, and I could certainly have some definition. So
You should shave tonight. Clean shave tonight.
I shaved this morning. So perfect. I will, yeah. But then I have to decide what to do because, you know, I just for men my goatee. So then do I let my mustache all be gray, too?
I think you let it go. I think you go, like you said, I mean, unanimously, the women on the show today agree that a little gray doesn't...
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear Ashley say that she likes the scruff. Interesting. All right. Well, I guess you're my millennial meter, so you're telling me to grow a beard. Maybe 2019... will be the year of the beard. Year of the beard. Although I do like, what was your phrase that pays? Feel is not the appeal.
The feel isn't the appeal.
Feel is not the appeal. I'm digging that. Wow. All right. Well, I've got a few more little trends here that we could talk about for millennials, but right now we should probably take a break, right, Curtis? Yeah, we'll take a quick break. Elton Jim filling in for Bill and Wendy here at WGN 720 AM. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you this morning, filling in for Bill and Wendy. Be here till noon, another hour or so. Right now we are in the midst of our Millennial Meter segment. I'm trying to see if I am still in with the scene. I guess just by saying that, I'm probably not in with the scene, am I?
Well, if you're saying it ironically, then yes, completely.
Well, you're about the only one who gets the joke, Patrick. So yeah, but so here's another thing that I noticed in the last year or so that bugs me, and I want to find out: A, do you do it? I think you do, and B, do you see it lasting long? I've never done it, and I don't, and I won't. I'm not digging the brown shoes with the blue pants.
Yeah. Okay. This is a good one.
This is a good one. Yeah.
I do not like the brown shoes with the blue pants. Now, I would wear brown shoes with black pants, but I do not like the brown shoes with blue pants. And one day, a couple weeks ago, I was watching one of the pregame shows for football, and you know how all the announcers and analysts, they all stand up and like with a backdrop, and every guy had the tight blue suit on with the brown shoes. And I just hated that look. I see it everywhere.
So I think that is the correct look.
Really?
Yes. I think
I would agree.
Yes. Brown and blue go together. Black and brown do not go together.
And black and blue don't either, I don't think. Unless it's a tux.
Yeah. You cannot put black with brown shoes. You have to wear black shoes with black.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I've got my black Doc Martens on today, but I do have a pair of brown Doc Martens that I have worn with black pants, and you're saying no, huh?
No. Yeah.
So, from a millennial perspective, I'll chime in. I agree with the blue with the brown for sure. I think that's a classic look. However, I think part of like the millennial, the whole millennial thing, right, is kind of disruption. So, like now, for example, black jeans with brown shoes, like a light brown, like a Chelsea boot, it's everywhere. It's like it's popular now. People are accepting it that you can kind of buck the trends.
So I've been a trendsetter. I didn't even know it.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't
even
know it, Jim.
Wow. See, once again, with the scene.
Yeah. And your Docs, I'm telling you, those are like, if you go down to Wicker Park there in Milwaukee, like, you know, every other person's wearing Doc Martens now, you know, Jim. So,
well, I've been wearing Doc Martens for 30 years. So, once again, right. I mean, you know, you could look at me. I'm just waiting for the scarf look to come in now. My scarf look that Pete McMurray seems to like so much. But, okay, but so you're saying still you think the brown shoes with the blue pants is going to continue?
Yeah, weigh in. Yep, in on that.
Wow.
And what is the deal with shoes in general? It seems like millennials have more pair of shoes than they ever did before.
And men.
Men. That's what I'm talking about. Like, my son has about 20 pairs of shoes. He's 22. I go, you have more shoes than I do. And my other son could care less. He's almost 30. He's like, I don't care about shoes. But my 22-year-old is infatuated with shoes.
Right. And remember, guys, we have three pairs, black and gym shoes and
mostly it was all gym shoes, really.
And now he has, you know, his work shoes, his bar shoes, is this? I'm like, what is going on? Right. They're all up and down the stairs.
Bar shoes. Remember we had those?
And I've noticed, Patrick, you've got quite a few shoes.
Yeah, I do. It's a growing collection. You know, like it's so funny though. You got to talk about it. Now there's apps for like so sneakers now. Like there's like lines outside of places that are releasing new sneakers. Adidas will release a new shoe, and kids are out there like camping in the morning as if it's like a movie release. It's crazy. And there's apps now that you can create these robot apps that will like make sure you're the first one to secure your sneaker before they're sold out. It's nuts. Like sneakers are crazy right now.
And the thing is, I don't necessarily hate the brown shoe with the blue pants, but everybody wears it.
Right.
It's like a uniform. I don't mind the look necessarily, but I guess what really turned me off to it was everybody wears it.
And for weddings,
right,
too.
Definitely.
Like, navy blue is a big color now.
Yeah.
Big color for men's.
And then, so I guess real quick, before we have to bail here, Patrick, what would you say is going to be a big millennial trend for 2019?
Yeah, 2019. So I think you're going to see, in terms of fashion for men, you're going to see turtlenecks a lot more.
Okay, now who's been wearing turtlenecks for 20 years? Thank you again.
Oh, no. Jim.
I swear to God, everybody's stealing my look.
We didn't get to the scars yet.
Yeah, the only thing is, we all got with the trends, and you just continued yours. You just waited for it to come back.
But see, because I'm always anti-trend. So whenever something gets popular, I run away from it. But now you guys are all running toward me.
That's it. We're all running toward you, yes.
I am the scene. You know what? You know what? This whole segment was about if I'm in with the scene. I just realized after you're talking, I am the scene.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's such a, that's a millennial view, right? Jim, you're a millennial, I swear. I don't believe you. You really
What's
are.
A millennial
and,
cutoff?
Fanny packs. Fanny packs, too, for
$20. Oh, my God. Whoa, wait a minute. Fanny packs are going to be are in?
Yeah. They're going to be in. Yeah, they're kind of in on the tail end here. Like, really, like the cool kids wear them. Yeah, you're going to see it. And they wear them, like, over their shoulder. So it's like, I think technically it's like a sling bag. You're going to see them, you know.
All right, I'm already hating that.
I thought you would be in on fanny packs for sure. I mean, think about the airport. Just all your stuff right in there. Just throw it on for TSA.
Well, that's why I always wear my coat, my long coat, much too late in the year because I like having pockets.
Right, there you go.
But well, the fanny pack coming back.
What's the official millennial cutoff? 37, 36?
I think it's 35. I'm an older millennial.
I always thought that you, to be a millennial, you had to be born in 1984 beginning. So you were born in 85. So I don't think you're that far. You're that far.
Yeah, I forget, you know. Yeah. I mean, I still remember dial-up internet. So, like, you talk to someone, and they're like, what?
All right, I'm going to have to run here. But first of all, so we've learned that the beard is going to stay in. The blue pants and the brown shoes are going to stay in. The turtleneck, my favorite, will be coming back. And, oh, my gosh, the fanny pack. That's about the scariest thing I've ever seen since the movie Young Frankenstein. Holy smokes. That is scary.
Or Adventures in Babysitting.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Well, Patrick, we will definitely see you in 2019. Thank you for being my millennial meter. As I say at the end of this segment, Patrick, I love you with all my heart, but I hate everything you stand for.
Awesome, Jim. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. That's my godson, Patrick Minot, with millennial meter here at WGN 720 AM. I am Jim Toronto filling in for Bill and Wendy, and after the news, we will go to the Pop Culture Club and talk about some of the big stories of 2019. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet, and that might just be me. Weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20.
So glad I'm in here.
WGN Chicago. Oh, by the way, smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 11:01. Here's the news with Andrea Millennial Darling. Elton Jim Toronto with you this morning, filling in for Bill and Wendy. We'll be here till noon, about 50 minutes or so. At 11:30, we will have mayoral candidate Paul Vallis in the studio talking about his candidacy. As Chicago mayoral politics will definitely be on the front burner at the beginning of 2019, probably starting today and certainly starting tomorrow, probably New Year's Day, right up until February 26th when the mayoral election in Chicago is. And if there is a runoff, then that will extend until April. So we will definitely have Chicago politics front and center at the beginning half of 2019. But right now, we want to take a little look back, at least, at some of the, well, I guess the main story, in my view, for 2018 as we sort of say goodbye and give our final wave. Only a couple hours left. I mean, think about it, folks. What do we got? 11 o'clock? So not even 12 hours left. And little baby New Year, old man 2018 will be walking out, and little baby New Year will be coming back in with his diapers on. So we have on the phone here Mr. Mick Kaler, my pop culture guru. How you doing there, Mick?
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Good, good, good. Did you have a good 2018? How would you rate your 2018?
You know, I really did. It was very positive. Unfortunately, several people I know did not have a good 2018, and I was telling someone the other day, I went to 5 wakes in the last month.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, just several people. It was just by happenstance. You know, one was a coworker, somebody that I knew from swimming this past summer, and some other people lost family members. So that was kind of a down, you know, way to spend your days, you know, in funeral homes talking to people.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, it was a pretty good year. I look forward to 2019 being a better year.
Well, real quickly, I wanted to just say I was talking about the big moments of 2018, and for me, I would say, do we have that, Curtis? I still cannot believe this happened on October 19th in Madison Square Garden. In New York City, while I was attending my 182nd Elton John concert, this happened.
There's so many people here tonight who are my friends. There's one person I want to dedicate this song to because I've been talking about you guys up there. This guy from Chicago has been to so many shows. He's one of the loyalest fans in the world. I've never dedicated this song to him, but tonight I'm dedicating this to Jim Toronto. This is you, baby.
Still can't believe that.
That was the highlight not only of the year but for your life.
Yeah, pal. I mean that was. I mean, I had no clue that was going to happen, and it. I was right in the front, and he looked right at me and dedicated "Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me," which is actually one of my favorite songs of his. But wow, that still. I have that. Not surprisingly, I have that on a CD in my car.
Okay, and keep playing it,
and I just keep hitting play every so often.
That should be your ringtone.
Yeah, I know. Wow.
I've talked about this before, but I always get concerned when I see pictures of Jim in the front row at Elton John concerts because it means Elton's security detail has failed with that 500 yards or further away restraining order that they have out on Jim.
Well, so. You could say that, but I mean, come on. You know, all those now, those are just silly jokes because we,
I guess so.
You know, people have said to me many times, does he know you? You go to all these concerts. I think I can honestly say with some confidence now, yes, he does know me.
There you go.
I can say that. And what I was most impressed about was he said my name correctly.
Right. It wasn't Torino,
yeah.
Toronto.
Good for you, Elton. But I wanted to talk a little bit about what I think was the story of 2018. And there were a lot of stories, don't get me wrong. And some were good stories, and some were very tough stories. We had the murder of the journalist, the Turkish journalist, and we had once again shootings,
school shootings
in schools,
right.
Which were terrible. We had some horrible natural disasters. So every year has its good, its high points as well as its low points. But I have to say, when you talk about one story that's, from my standpoint, really seemed to capture many layers of the public intrigue, it had legal ramifications, it had pop culture ramifications, it had societal ramifications. It all came into one, and I believe that really was the confirmation hearing in September of Judge Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, about
that. Definitely was a major deal, without question.
I mean, it really it's like I said. Not only did it impact so many different layers of our society, but the most important one for me, being this kind of voice in the wilderness, screaming about how we're becoming so isolated because of the growth of technology, for the first time in many years. This was a communal experience. Everybody was watching the same thing for a couple of days.
Well, yeah.
At the same time.
For many of the reasons you just said, Jim, as far as, you know, it involved sex, it involved culture, it involved changing mores, male and female relationships, you know, the way things used to be as opposed to what's accepted now with behavior. There were all these different factors in there that were major hot buttons that somebody had a story from. Like, you've been at a party where somebody was drunk, or you've been at a party where this happened, or you might have done this or that. Everyone's got something like that in their past, so that's why I think they glued into this.
Well, I mean, first of all, like I said, we've got the legal implications, obviously, as a Chief Justice of the United States, and then, of course, the idea, the political ideologies and people concerned about if he's too conservative, are certain rights going to go away, especially the right to an abortion. Everybody very keyed in on that. This played into the Me Too movement because there were sexual allegations against him. This went into the pop culture world, as you said, because it was about defining the role of men and women. And what's interesting is it's always difficult to take today, the mores and the perspectives of one era and then go back and put them on that one from 30 or 40 years ago because times were different.
Exactly. And the one thing that I learned from all this, and you also mentioned the Me Too movement, when all this stuff came to a head, I heard from many different female friends of mine who've got stories that were kind of similar to what the woman was claiming with Kavanaugh that I never knew about. And all of a sudden there was this, I wouldn't say silent majority, but certainly a silent contingent of people that were like, hey, I've been in her position and I never told anybody.
And as I said, you know, through our history, you know, like I said, there was in 1956, you can talk to people and say, you know, they were watching the Ed Sullivan show when Elvis was on, and the world changed. In fact, in Bruce Springsteen's new Broadway show, he says the revolution was televised, and it was televised on the Ed Sullivan show in 1956 when Elvis performed and changed the world.
Right, everything stopped. Everything got moved from there, exactly.
And then in 1964, once again, the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan. You had 1969, which we're going to be commemorating in 2019, the landing on the moon. And then you had Watergate in 1973. Obviously, you had 9/11. These were communal, you know, the O.J. Simpson trial, where everybody was watching the same thing. And we've become so isolated now. We do our own thing. We time shift. We watch. We stream. There's very few communal cultural events, but this was one in September.
Yeah, without question. In fact, I was even teaching it to my middle school social studies students. We were talking about the Supreme Court and all that was going on. And to be honest, it was interesting to see their reactions because they're younger, but they understood the implications of the past and how things have changed. And it was really a really interesting experience. It didn't really matter how it turned out, just the fact that people were so focused in on it.
Now, for me, the highlight, I don't know if it's a highlight, but one of the more interesting aspects of the entire Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearing struck home for me, and it was not where you would think. I'm not getting into the sordid part of it, allegedly. It was the revelation that Brett Kavanaugh used a date book.
Right.
That he had his calendar of events from back in 1982, where he was saying, hey, look, I have this calendar from 1982, and I don't see any party on here. And everybody was shocked that someone would have a date book or have a calendar where they wrote down all their events. And I'm sitting there going, hey, gang, I use a date book to this day, and I have about 15 years worth of mine in a file cabinet. And I love going through my date book, and I love having my hard copy day planner. In fact, about 3 weeks ago, I went to Target and bought my 2019, and I'm already all set.
So the good news is, if anybody ever accuses you of something untoward, right. You can go back to those old calendar date books and say, hey, wait a minute, no, I wasn't there then.
Right, but I was saying, hey, everybody was giving Brett Kavanaugh a hard time for, oh, wow, is he out of touch, or what a square ball, or why would he have this date book? And I said, hey, I've got my daily planner. I love my daily planner. In fact, what I used to love when I had a desk at work, remember the giant calendar that you would put on your desk?
That was your blotter. I had one of those when I was back in my radio days. I always had one of those as well as a date book that helped me plan out things that we're going to do for radio shows. Sure.
Yeah, it was so cool. You put it on your desk. It had this nice little holder for it, and then you wrote on there. And then when the month was up, I used to love like lifting up the page and going and ripping off that month and sticking it underneath. And then of course remember the little date thing that you could flip with the three rings?
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, the little thing. I had one of those on my desk too.
I didn't have one of those, but I had the date book because that's how I would plan stuff out. But I didn't save mine every year, whether it was a personal one or professional one like you have.
Like I said, like what I will do today, I will go back and look at my 2018 and go through from January to December, and I'll go, oh, that's right. I went out. Oh, that's right. We did that. We went here. I did this. Da, 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 da. You know, you'd be surprised how you forget things. So
sure.
Regardless of whether you like Brett Kavanaugh politically or personally, whatever, I'm not getting into that aspect. But I have to say that at least on the date book thing, I was tracking with him.
And you will probably till the day you die, I bet.
Yes, I will. I love it. I hope they don't stop making them. That's my only fear. They're getting harder and harder to find. But
they don't have them at the stationery stores?
It's hard to find them. Yeah, because it's really, I went to Staples and Office Max and they didn't have any.
Wow. Wow, you might special order that from Amazon.
Yeah, or they had like half-year ones. I'm like, no, I want a 2019 from January to December. I don't want June of 2018 to June of 2019. I want January to December.
You want to go soup to nuts the whole way.
Exactly, exactly. So anyway, we're talking to Mick Kaler here on the Pop Culture Club. I'm Elton Jim filling in for Bill and Wendy. It's about 11:20. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN, 7:20 a.m., filling in for Bill and Wendy. Be here till noon. Right now we are in the midst of being in the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. Mick, I also always, when we do the Pop Culture Club segment, I always have you explain why I play Karma Chameleon. Explain to the people why I play Karma Chameleon as an intro to the Pop Culture Club.
Your club, saying Karma Chameleon, we're in the Pop Culture Club. That's it.
There you go. Pop culture, culture club. Thank you.
Pretty simple, pretty clever, and pretty pithy.
Well, I'll tell you, this show works on so many levels. It's like a Bullwinkle cartoon.
Yeah, you know,
there's
right.
So many things happening all at the same time here. One of these days, as I said, they're going to find tapes of this show in 40 or 50 years and say, wow, what he was the Ernie Kovacs of radio.
Underappreciated. Yeah.
You're too old school. There'll be digital files.
I know, exactly. That's why I cling.
Digital downloads is what they're going to recover.
That's
There'll be MP3s somewhere.
That's why I cling to my day planner, and I'm very heartened. I've been looking at the text here, and several people are chiming in and saying how they also have a day planner. They go to TJ Maxx. They found one at Target. They're giving me places to go.
Actually, I've grown up to use the calendar on my phone.
Oh,
because I'm one of those guys that used to be able to keep it all in my head, and then one day it's like, nah, it's too much. Okay,
no.
Just put in the calendar.
Yeah,
it's so much easier.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you definitely, I remember the days of the Palm Pilot. Remember the Palm Pilot?
Sure, which,
unfortunately.
Stylus on it? Yeah.
That was like kind of the first, personal, what did they used to call it? Like a personal assistant.
PDA.
PDA, exactly.
Personal digital assistant.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the first time. But I was sitting there, even in those days, I was clutching on to the past and saying, hey, I love my day planner.
Hey, Jim's the guy that his cell phone is actually a rotary dial. So,
well, hey, I have a flip phone, and I am proud of it. And I just found out the other day, I was very excited, I found out I have an alarm on my phone.
There you go.
So look at that. I could use it to wake myself up. That's how great my flip phone is. And I have bowling and Tetris. So I have too many apps on my phone already.
You're living in a world of miracle and wonder.
These are the days.
Yeah.
I am the boy in the bubble. There's no question about that.
No doubt. That I will go with.
So I was saying that I thought the Brett Kavanaugh story was probably the story. What would you pick another story out of the year, do you think? Or do you think there was a moment that we should remember about 2018?
No, I really think that was, too, just because, you know, the Me Too stuff started the year before, but it just, again, brought this groundswell up of more stories and more memories of people, and again, different sides of that. And the one thing that struck me when he was testifying, whether you believed him or not, I couldn't believe that guy's anger. And I mean, you could just see the rage that he was very upset about the whole thing, but it wasn't like upset like, oh, poor me. I saw a lot of anger, like, whoa, maybe this did happen. I don't know. I have no idea either way, but
he was even
that's what I saw.
He was even challenging do you remember? Do you have any beer, Senator?
What beer do you like?
Do you like to you like to drink beer? I don't know. It's 30 years ago, Senator. What do you like to drink? Wow. He's like,
Yeah, and it's like I didn't expect him to be mousy, but I did not expect him to be jumping like that. But that was a big deal, and I think in 2019, I think whatever the as far as political stuff goes, whatever the Robert Mueller probe into everything yields, I mean, we're obviously going to find out whether it's a lot or a little, and I think that could be a major story.
Yeah,
into the
that's going to be another. Yeah, that's probably that's a great one in terms of looking ahead. That's been going on for at least a year and a half, if not 2 years.
Right.
And it has to come to a head pretty soon. I would assume that 2019, I can't believe they're going to wait till 2020.
No, I think it'll be before then. And like I said, who knows what comes out of it? But I think whatever way it goes, I think that'll be a major story and something to talk about a year from now.
The one thing that I also wanted to mention, you know, you all at the end of the year here, we always talk about some of the celebrities and well known people that have passed away over the last 12 months, and there's always those in memoriam types of things, and there's always in the newspaper, and this year there was, and there's a lot of people that you forget. I mean, remember we lost John Mahoney, the actor, and Billy Graham, and Milos Forman, the director, Winnie Mandela, Stephen Hawking, Tom Wolfe, the writer, Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain. One of the names that I felt really got overlooked, of course, we lost Stan Mikita, too. But one of the names that really got overlooked, which I felt was really a shame, because I just don't think that people of this era know of him or remember him as well, but the great comedian or comic playwright, Neil Simon, passed away.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought about that, too, because I was watching the CBS Sunday Morning Memoriam, the Hail and Farewell, the other day, and I was like, oh, that's right, Neil Simon passed.
Yeah, and he was 91 years old, and, I mean, you know, it's been a while since he's been in the news, but,
right.
You know, he has been in the 20th century, and even into the new century, but certainly in the 20th century, he was responsible. He goes back to creating comedy tastes for this country, or if not the world, going back to the early days of television with Sid Caesar on your show of shows. And then, of course, he wrote some groundbreaking plays like The Odd Couple, which is still redone. It was just redone a few years ago with Matthew Perry. It's just one of those constants in comedy. And he really helped shape the form of comedy that we laugh at, and he worked with people like Woody Allen and influenced so many people, and I was really sad to see that his impact was not appreciated as much as I thought. There was a lot said about Stan Lee,
right?
You know, because now everybody is into comic books.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. Is you said it, Stan Lee. Okay, there's still superhero movies. He's doing all the conventions and things like that. And yeah, you're right. Neil Simon was not as active or as out there, but that formation between the movies, but before that, the plays, movies, television too, because a couple TV, you know, on television, other shows that he had influence on. I mean, there was a lot there that you're right. I think he was underappreciated. It's a
Brighton
good point.
Beach Memoirs and Lost in Yonkers,
Biloxi Blues, which I love.
Biloxi Blues. So Neil Simon, we have not forgotten you. And who would have thought that sitcom and game show regular Elaine Joyce, who married Neil Simon, would wind up getting Odd Couple money when he died? Who would have thought that? Anyway, that ends our Pop Culture Club for 2018. Thank you so much, Mick. We look forward to talking to you in 2019.
All right, buddy. Happy New Year. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Jim Toronto filling in for Bill and Wendy here at WGN 720 AM. It's 11:31, and here is the news with David Jennings.
My kind of town, Chicago is. My kind of town.
Jim Toronto with you here at WGN 720 AM, filling in for Bill and Wendy. People who they smile at you. The guy's smiling at me right now across the across the microphone here is mayoral candidate for, he is mayoral candidate, Paul Vallis. Welcome to the show, Paul.
That was actually fur on my face. I thought you were going to ask me to join in.
Your millennial beard. You've got your millennial goatee I do.
You've got to do something to hide that sagging chin.
I guess, right. Well, thank you for taking time out from your
thank you.
Your New Year's Eve. What does a Paul Vallis do on New Year's Eve?
I work.
Oh, very well. Now, there's an answer. You know, we could stop this interview right there. That's the kind of answer you want to get from potential mayor. I work on New Year's
Eve.
My
wife's working. I'm working. My my boys are on duty. They're police officers.
Oh, wow.
So they're active in Wheaton in San Antonio. So it's going to be a work night.
Well, as I was saying at the top of the show, while the mayoral candidate or the campaign has been, you know, on and off in the spring and the fall and things like that, It's going to be right to the hilt now.
8 weeks, right?
I mean, this is what, February 26th is,
that's right,
is the
26th.
Date. So from now until then, I would assume that you are going to have many long, long days and probably a lot of sleepless nights.
Probably. But, you know, it's been like that for me really since April. So I've been pretty aggressive, taking advantage of any opportunities to talk to the public about my vision and my specific ideas on how to address the city's problems. But clearly, it's really going to heat up now. And hopefully, some candidates will start showing up to public forums like like Daley and others.
Well, that was one of my first questions. Given the amount, once Mayor Emanuel decided not to run for another term, then suddenly everybody came out of the woodwork. Now, when did you officially announce that you were going to run for mayor?
When did I announce? I think it was in April.
Of 2018.
Of 2018.
So you're one of the first.
Yeah. And I had indicated my intent to run in early February. And then, you know, we had some issues. We had some family issues that delayed the announcement. So I announced I officially announced in April. And
right.
You're right. I mean, there are these courageous candidates who decided, who were rarely critical of Emanuel before he ran, and now suddenly decided to run after he decided to drop out.
So here's my question. So with so many people entering now, there's almost 20, depending on the day. Sometimes there's 20, sometimes there's 17. And without having an incumbent, without having that mercurial candidate or that incumbent like Rahm Emanuel to run against, what does that do now for your candidacy? How do you, A, get your name above the din of all these people, and B, do you now run, instead of running against Rahm Emanuel and his record, do you run against the state of the city?
Well, you know, I've been running, you know, if you're going to say run against the state of the city, my whole campaign from the very beginning has been to really run an issue-oriented campaign, and I have been doing that. If you go to my website, valorsforallchicago.com, I laid out my public safety initiatives with great specificity in, I think, April. I laid out my budget plan for how to address the pension funding issue, how to get city spending under control, and how to cap property taxes. I not only presented that in October, but I actually spoke before the City Club, so it's online if people want to view it. So on every issue, from what I'm going to do with the fire department, how I'm going to get lead out of the water, I refer to it as my Marshall Plan for revitalizing the West Sides and the South Sides, have been laid out with great specification. So what I've been doing is doing as many podcasts and radio talk shows as I could possibly do. And I've been holding my own town hall meetings, and I live stream them. And sometimes the town hall meetings are like radio town hall meetings, mm-hmm. and where people can ask me virtually any question. So I've been doing that, and I'm going to continue to do that from now until the end of the campaign. And, you know, right now I'm kind of in a, depending on what poll you look at, Preckwick was first in the polls, but she's in the 20s. I'm relatively, Daley Mendoza and I are kind of bunched up in second place. And if I get into a runoff, I win. So I'm hoping now that people are really paying close attention to this election, are beyond the holidays, that all the work that I've done to this date, you know, people will begin to notice. And I'm going to continue to run the campaign that I'm running, which is the campaign every day, and to try to get before the public every day, whatever means, like this.
Well, we should say that you obviously have made a name for yourself here in Chicago. You're the head of the public schools, and it was one of the more impressive eras of the Chicago public schools. And you also did the same thing in Philadelphia. You've also done some work in Haiti.
Yeah, well, you know, after Philadelphia, and I balanced 5 out of 6 budgets in Philadelphia, we actually tripled math scores, double reading scores. I was brought in because that district was taken over by the state. It was a state takeover. And as you know, this is like the 10th anniversary of Rahm Emanuel. Excuse me, Freudian slip. Rob Blagojevich getting indicted. and going to jail. And I, of course, challenged the political establishment here back in 2001, didn't get any support from the likes of Preckwinkle and Daley and Chico and Mendoza and others, almost beat Emanuel. Almost beat Blagojevich. I lost by 1.5 percentage points. But then I went to Philadelphia, and then I rebuilt the schools in New Orleans after Katrina. I was asked to go there, and then I spent time in Haiti after the devastating earthquake that killed like a quarter of a million people back in 2010. I did similar work in Chile after the earthquake. In that country, didn't have nearly the devastation, but nevertheless, my approach, my life has been one of public service, and I've always responded to crises and opportunities to go in and to try to make a difference. And Chicago's in a crisis. This is why I'm running. That we've had decades of mismanagement.
Well, that's the one thing that I wanted to talk to, because I looking at your 5-point plan and the overall messaging of your campaign is about problems and solving them.
That's right.
And in my view, as a voter, as a citizen, I think rhetoric is fine, but I really think that we need people who are willing to identify a problem, to be honest about it, and sometimes it's a little uncomfortable. But if you talk to any doctor, if they find somebody has a tumor, they don't say, "Well, you've got a tumor, but hopefully it'll get better."
Right.
They say, "I'm sorry to tell you this, but you've got a tumor. Here's what it is, and here are the steps we're going to take. And if we take these steps, here are the results we expect."
Right.
And that's what I was impressed about in looking at your website, is that you sort of are taking that approach of looking at the problems, identifying them, offering solutions, and offering then what those solutions will give us in terms of results. And I think that's the way you've kind of done your career.
Well, that's the way I've always done it. When I inherited the Chicago Public Schools, and you're going to get a lot of rhetoric out there, and in this age, day and age of blogging and social media and things like that, you've got to distinguish between the facts and the fiction. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, I mean, when I took over the city budget office in '93 when they were in crisis, and 3 years of balanced budgets, record number of cops on the streets, 70% of the streets resurfaced, affordable housing. There was a transformation. I took over the school district when it had $1 billion structural deficit and left them with $1 billion in cash and 70,000 more students than they have today. So this has been, I've always been a problem solver. My approach has always been to go in, bring financial stability to the systems that I've taken responsibility for, design budgets that are long-term financial plans that actually invest in the community to generate growth. And that has always been the approach that I've taken. I mean, the reason we were so successful during that time at the Chicago Public Schools was we did things to grow the district. And when the district grew, it got more money, because that's how the funding formulas work. As a result, I had larger cash balances than even I anticipated. I should have spent more of that money. So the approach is to really to do long-term financial planning with an eye towards investing in the type of things that are going to grow the city. And that means you have to invest in public safety. You have to invest in infrastructure. You've got to take advantage of these considerable federal, state, and local incentives that are available to focus on investing in the 80% of the city that hasn't experienced any investment, or in some cases have become economically degraded over the decades. I mean, there are areas of the city, West Side and South Side, that have been in depression states for 4 decades. So at the end of the day, that's been the approach that I've taken, and I've always been successful, which is why I've always left the systems in much better financial shape, and I've always left systems that have been growing.
Well, but we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're with Paul Vallis, who's running for mayor here. Don't forget, February 26th is the mayoral election in Chicago. When we come back from the break, what I wanted to, since you're talking about being a problem solver, what I'd like to do in the time that we will have remaining then is to maybe pick 2 of the most important and urgent problems that Chicago has and offer your solutions.
All right.
Great. We will take a quick break. It's Jim Toronto with Paul Vallis here at WGN 720 AM. We'll be back after this. No switching. Speaking of February 26th, 2019, that is when Chicagoans will go to the polls to vote for a new mayor. And one of the men or people who is hoping to be on the 5th floor of the City Hall is with me today. Paul Vallis, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
And we were talking about earlier when you got in here about your kind of perspective or how you go about solving problems, identifying problems. So in the little time that we have left,
right,
I was just hoping that you can maybe pick one or two of the key, most urgent, pressing problems that Chicago has and what you think those problems are and how you'd solve them and what results you hope to get.
Okay, so let me talk about, first of all, public safety, but let me talk about the police department itself, and I'm going to talk about economic opportunity, because if you don't have economic opportunity, if you have deteriorating neighborhoods, it creates conditions for rising crime. So a lot of people say, you're talking about cops, you need to be talking about economic development. But let me talk about public safety first. The problem with the police department is it was degraded. 2,000 vacancies were not filled. The detective division was cut in half. You wonder why our clearance rates plummeted. The ratio of sergeants to officers became 1 to 30. They didn't have ongoing, continuous, redundant professional development and training, etc. So what I would do in a nutshell, is I would fill all the police vacancies. I would bring the police department up to 13,600. That includes the 1 to 10 sergeant ratios. That includes having the training officers that can provide supervision and that can guide these new recruits. I would restore the 5 detectives division as opposed to 3. I would also supplement the detectives division by bringing in retired detectives, because right now, even though they've now begun to fill those detective vacancies, we have the least experienced detective division than we've ever had. And I would do what the other cities have done, like New York and Denver and Dallas and London, which is they've brought back retired officers with investigatory experience so that they can get these shooters off the street. So at the end of the day, I would rebuild the police department. And in the process, what I would do is I would go into the schools and I would begin to convert some of their safety and security positions to Chicago Chicago Police Department positions, so that every officer, every school has a police officer. You know, I was in Bridgeport, Connecticut. My neighboring school district was Sandy Hook when this, when that tragedy occurred. I had a teacher who actually had a daughter in one of those classes who was killed. So at the end of the day, you know, I feel you need protection in the schools. But if you did that, and if you had a school police patrol that were trained to interact with the kids, then 165 days of the year, you would have 600 officers that you could dispatch to where the students are, to where the young people are, to where the high crime areas skyrocket. Because what we do now is we cancel leaves, we cancel time off, and we spend $100 million in overtime dispatching police from their beats in the neighborhoods to other neighborhoods to provide additional security. So if you did that, that would pay for itself just in the overtime savings, you see. So at the end of the day, you would have a police department that would have the resources, as well as the what I would call accountability infrastructure, the sergeants, the training officers, so that you could have the proper effective supervision so that the police department could, in effect, be much more effective.
Well, Chicago certainly, you know, those of us who live here know that it's not Dodge City, that well, certainly crime is in every big city. It for the most part, these horrendous homicide numbers that we hear and these shootings numbers are relegated to two, you know, areas in the city, the west side and
the
south side.
But, you know, the violent crime has been spreading, if not the murders, the robberies, the carjackings. I mean, really. And so they've continued to go up. And even though they're trying to claim that shootings are down, I think the last month or two, they've actually been up again. The bottom line is New York had a 90% reduction in its murder rate. Why? The police department, they don't have better police officers than we do. They made a sustained investment in the police department and in police department training. Even when they went back and they went back on, they went, you know, they put restrictions on the whole, you know, the they reined in the police department in terms of their aggressiveness and things like
right.
that, or in terms of the things that they could do in terms of stopping and checking
frisk
and things like that. The murder rate continued to decline. Why? Because they had the resources, the leadership, the capacity, and the support to be effective. They had reached that tipping point where they were winning the war on crime. So at the end of the day, we can do it. And there's many more details that I've afforded on my website, including, because what I would also do is double the number of police officers who are on the CTA stations, on the transit stops, because we've seen a spike in crime on CTA. People are afraid to use mass transportation. You know, panic buttons. That's, you know, installing panic buttons. It's a no-brainer. So that's one thing that I would do.
Real quick, let me ask you the most simple, basic question. Why do you want to be mayor?
because the city's in trouble, and this is the city I love, and this is the city where my grandparents settled in on the south side of Chicago, Roseland, and I went to three public schools. You know, in fact, when I rebuilt schools in Chicago, you know, I built 78 school buildings in Chicago, most of them in the poorest communities. And Mendel High School, when it was abandoned by the Catholics, the Augustinians sold me the campus, and I built Gwendolyn Brooks, which is a Southside magnet school. So, you know, the city is in crisis. There are great needs. This is a great city. This city deserves the type of leadership that reflects the quality of its hardworking citizens. And at the end of the day, we need somebody who not only knows how to manage budgets, but knows how to transform those budgets into the type of investment vehicles that can benefit the entire city. And, you know, that's why I'm running. I believe I'm that person for the job. And just as I challenged the establishment and Rob Blagojevich, when he originally ran in 2001, ran against the machine, ran against the organization, got outspent 14-1 and lost by 1.5 percentage points. And let me point out, and when I ran, I actually beat him in the city and killed him in the suburbs. I just didn't have the money to get on TV downstate. Well, I'm challenging that same establishment again. Hopefully, you know, voters will vote for me this time. We all know what happened when Rod went to jail and I went to Philadelphia.
There you go. Well, I want to thank Paul Vallis, who is running for mayor here in Chicago, for taking some time on your New Year's Eve. Once again, wish you best on the campaign trail and safe travels.
Well, thank you so much, and Happy New Year to you. And I want to wish my campaign manager, Brian Towne, congratulations on his first child.
Oh, very nice.
8 pounds, 6 ounces. That's a big baby.
And that's a baby that beats the tax break, right?
That's right.
Good timing there.
And I won't be calling him into work today.
Oh, there you go. See, now there's a good boss for you. Well, Paul Vallis, once again, thank you for taking time. Don't forget, folks, if you are a registered voter, please register.